This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Desire to work and to be good at what you do instead of just barely getting by and sitting on a phone the whole time. And turns out there's a fairly big difference between older generations, maybe people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, versus people in their teens, 20s, and 30s as far as, you know, their willingness to show up on time or show up at all or pay attention while they're at work. And if you want to comment, you can. I know Major Payne was on the line here with us. He's back. Major, you were kind of, I think you were about to tell a story that was relevant to our conversation.
No, I can't talk to you. You know, my goldfish died. I'm totally in panic. Now, before I continue with my stories, I want to give you a visual that I just had today. And you guys were talking about kids and their addiction to these damn smell phones. So I'm bouncing down the road in my truck going down Golf Course Road today. And I'm going past the various holes. And I'm only doing about 35, so I got a pretty good visual. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's this foursome coming up the fairway towards the split rail fence at the edge of the road. And there's three of these guys. And it's a public course. You know, most of them don't drag carts and whatnot. They drag their bags.
Yep.
So there's these three guys. They're kind of walking together, and you can tell they're chatting. Well, there's this one youngin', and I could tell he was a youngin' because he was wearing a hoodie and he had his head down and he was all up in his smell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And he was about 30 yards spread of him and about 20 yards in front, you know, because, well, I don't know if he didn't want to have a conversation with the old men or he just wanted to be in his own damn world.
Yeah.
But you would think, on a beautiful spring day, you've had cabin fever all winter. You're out on the golf course, the birds are singing, and you want to deal with Twitter. I mean,
yeah,
come on, dude.
They do.
It's
possible he was one of their kids, right, and just didn't want to be there at all, and like you said, was just trying to get away from it entirely. Oh, I don't want to be with Dad, that kind of thing. I mean, that's been around. That mentality's been around for a long time.
Then why would he even agree to go at that point? I mean, he was not, you know, like 12. This kid was 18 to 20-something. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. I mean, there's plenty of stories like that, Major. Anything else you want to share tonight?
Well, yeah, you were talking about teaching your kids how to do work. Well, a buddy of mine, and he's always been a good provider, but he thought that was where his responsibility ended, so to speak. He pretty much let Mama have run on raising the children, and she was overwhelmed because he was a Catholic, and he gave her a bunch of freaking children.
So wait, you mean the man of the house thought his responsibility was to just earn money and then do absolutely nothing else to raise the kids?
Pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, it was minimal at best, let's put it that way.
A lot of men feel like that.
Who is actually my namesake, he named him after me. So I'm down there, and he's about, I don't know, 12, 13 years old. My buddy needed some help fixing some stuff up, so I went down there to help him out. And fall's coming on, so we're out there on the deck, and we're stacking firewood. And this is his job, right? I shouldn't even be having to do this. So I'm out there helping him, and he's stacking these quarter-split logs or, you know, rough-split logs real haphazard. And if you're going to get any kind of cordage, you got to stack them 4 foot high, right? And so we're about 2 and a half foot high, and I notice he's, you know, throwing them in real squirrely. So he throws another one on there, and I kind of, Patrick, I grabbed the top of the stack, and I gave it a wiggle. And I said, you see how that damn thing shook?
Mm-hmm.
He says, yeah. I says, well, it's your job to sack this firewood, right? Yeah. Well, if you don't do it right, the damn pile's going to fall over. And it's going to fall over on you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't you think maybe you better learn how to do the damn job proper?
What'd he say?
And at that point, the light bulb went on, and he paid a little more attention and started, a log will settle if you give it 2-3 flips, or if you just look at it good as you're taking it to the damn pile.
Right. All right, Major. Good story, man. Yep. Thanks for sharing it tonight. I'm glad that he was able to pay attention. Did he end up getting it right?
He did, but he ended up getting it wrong. I mean, it's life is a slippery slope, and I fear for the younger generation.
Yeah.
The rest of us.
LRN.FM.
Man, thanks for the call tonight. I do appreciate hearing from you. The number is 603-283-6160. For those just wondering what he was saying, he's frustrated at the younger generation and saying we're not going to be around, those of us who are older, to help them forever, right? And that is a big concern here, right? If people in businesses are hiring elderly people for jobs that younger people would normally be given, well, those elderly folks, I mean, the guy, the 70-year-old that the packing and shipping store is hiring, your average man in the United States isn't going to make it past 75. I mean, the dude's not going to be there forever. It's not going to be. It may be his last job, basically. And so, I mean, the good generations that know how to work and have a good work ethic are going to die off. And what is that going to leave us with? I think the best case we can hope for here is that an upcoming generation sees the laziness of the preceding generations, and then maybe they'll turn around and they'll do some good work.
So I believe in the good things coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been saying that for a long time. And the future is going to have more opportunity, I believe, than ever going forward, even as it does right now, and we've seen in the past couple of years, for anyone who wants to do something. So you don't even have to really be like that skilled or that smart today to get a very good paying job. You just have to be, willing to go to work, get up and go work hard,
mm-hmm.
and you can get paid very, very well. There is a lot of people, and if you can have a little bit of skill to it, like go work with a roofing crew, for example. If you're going to go work with a roofing crew, and you're just a guy that's just picking up the trash on the ground, you're probably getting $20 to $25 an hour, I would imagine. I mean, basically, you really can't hire anybody that'll actually come and do like real work for less than $20 or $25 an hour, even if it's just splitting firewood.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is if you have skills, if you have ambition and desire, and you get your dopamine hit from like going to work and doing work, the future is going to be tremendous opportunity for you, because anyone who wants to, first off, anybody can learn a skill. Even if you're in a wheelchair, I got a friend who's in a wheelchair, and she has 5 jobs. And she's, quite well skilled in, what she does. She does a lot of, computer work and things like that. And, if you're healthy bodied, and you have mental clarity, you're not insane.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why you can't be worth, a lot of money, especially just to go work in repair shops. All these mechanics are, you don't even have to have your own tools, and you can make $25 an hour just going to work in someone's shop, or even more. Because
you might even be able to apprentice at some of these places.
Well, and that's it, too. So, definitely teenagers that are interested in, cars, they should be trying to apprentice in repair shops.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, so as this pendulum, as we're getting more and more people who are sort of incompetent, that lack confidence, because in order to have competence, you first must have confidence.
For sure.
And just because you have confidence doesn't mean you have competence, but, you'll get there. So there's so many people now that have no idea how to fix their car, more than ever.
Yeah.
And actually, right now in America, the car fleet of privately owned registered automobiles is the oldest it's ever been in history.
Really?
Yeah, because, well, cars are so expensive right now, and mm-hmm. in the past few years, a lot of people haven't bought new cars because it's just the price is insane. I mean, to go buy, like, the pickup truck that I drove here is a 1997 Ford diesel pickup truck, basically the best one you could get of the day. That same truck, to go buy it right now, outfitted the way my 30-year-old truck is outfitted, is $100,000.
God, that's insane.
And, like, the sticker on this particular pickup truck, 1997, I think was, like, 19 grand or something. Or 18. No, brand new, when they bought it, you know.
Okay.
Or 20, you know, just shy of $20,000.
Yeah. No, that's inflation for you, right?
Well, at, you know, almost 30 years, 5X.
Yeah, I remember seeing ads. I was watching an old show from like the early 90s. I remember seeing ads for like $2,000 to $5,000 brand new cars.
Oh yeah,
back then.
Yep.
You know.
So, anyways, well, yeah, and basically, you know, a buddy of mine, a guy taught me blacksmithing, a guy I apprenticed with. He had a 73 F350 that he bought with a plow, brand new in 1974 as a leftover. He still had the truck when I was a teenager, and he paid like, you know, $2,900 for that truck, you know, and today's literally for that, you know, it's like $100,000 almost.
Yeah, it might have been 9,000, maybe five was a little too low, but still way cheaper than today.
Well, you're talking cars and trucks, which, you know, so even like today, a cheap car is like $35,000.
Yeah.
And if you can even come up with it. So the thing is like learning to be a mechanic, for example, to work on cars as a young kid is actually pretty easy because, Anybody who's running the repair shop would love to have a teenager there that like is eager to learn and wants to learn. And, you know, even if that kid's just sweeping up the floor and taking out the trash and like picking up the tools and cleaning them up and putting them away. I mean, that's how you learn how to do all these things. You got to do all the S jobs. You got to do all the difficult jobs.
You gotta start at the bottom of the rung.
And it also teaches you, you know, gives you sort of a lot of appreciation and respect for, you know, for the work and the job, you know, doing that bottom of the barrel job. Apprenticing is a really good thing, although it's a little tough. So if you're like a mom and you're like, oh, I'm going to take my 13-year-old who, you know, really likes trucks and cars over to Meineke and see if he'll apprentice, they'll probably
freak out. They're
going to
turn you away too young.
Because, you know, you probably have to be 18 years old to work there and all that kind
of
stuff.
Good chance of it, yeah.
One thing that's cool about New Hampshire, you drive around rural New Hampshire, and there are so many repair shops that is basically a one-car garage off somebody's house everywhere in New Hampshire. You see them in the cities. You see them out in the woods. And those are the kind of guys that are like, oh, yeah, you young man, you want to work? Let's do it. And
they'd be excited, right?
Absolutely. Very excited.
Let's continue here. We got Ricky on the line. He's in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ricky.
Thank you there, Brother Ian. Brother Jay, good evening.
What's on your mind?
Well, I got two things. The first thing, you know, came clear to me. You know, I was thinking of it after last night. You know, I used the same terminology when I was running for District 189. I used Confederate Democrat. And I noticed that it always seems to, lately, since I come back to either A, slavery, or B, like last night, Bonnie heard something that was that the brother stuff had something to do with white people. That was news to me anyways. I talked about that. But to me, the word Confederate Democrat, when you look Confederate, there's something a hell of a lot more obvious right off the top because Riley didn't even know what that meant. And that's the secession.
I don't think anybody knows what Confederate Democrat means. That's why
they
ask you.
First of all, let's look at Confederate. That's secession. I've been talking about secession for damn near 40 years. You know, that's right off the top. That was a big part of my campaign when I was running. You know, that's right off the top. And then Democrat, well, that's pretty much, I mean, for myself, I'm more or less a traditional Democrat with some new elements thrown in. You know, I'm liberal, but I'm not what I would call a leftist, you know? I mean, but it seems to come back.
So what does that mean? You said, you know, I don't know. What does that mean? A traditional Democrat, liberal, but not leftist. Give me an example.
Well, I'd say in the vein of, say, a Thomas Jefferson, maybe going up through the time, going towards the Civil War, maybe even after that. But once you get into the 1900s, it starts to get weird and messy back and forth.
Yeah, but just give me one example. Like, what does it mean to be a traditional Democrat?
Well, I think people right off the top, you know, liberal when it comes to civil rights, That's right off the top. I believe in for the people, by the people when it comes to government.
Okay, well, but give me an example. Like, more, be more specific. You're just kind of giving me these generalities. You're giving me these talking points. But like, pick an issue. Like, what does a traditional Democrat think about, you know, war, for instance?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, with very few exceptions, except when it would come to defense, I'm anti-war.
Okay. When you say it would come to defense, what's an example of a defense that you would support?
Well, I can give two, and unfortunately one of them comes to modern times. But first of all, obviously, if we were attacked, I mean, that's obvious.
Yeah.
Second of all, unfortunately, the modern times we live in, we have things called alliances and things like that, which is something generally I don't believe in at all.
Okay.
But we have them, unfortunately. And when you're dealing with something like, say, this Ukraine issue, and you have possible domination of Europe and all of that, it gets messy. And I'm not defending it. You know, but I can understand our involvement after we found out that now NATO troops are there. I'm not defending it, but I can understand it.
It's kind of a strange position to be in. So you're against
it? Yeah, well, against alliances, so is Jefferson. I mean, his motto was trade with everyone, alliance to no one.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, you agree with that. All right. How about welfare? That's a typical kind of Democrat issue. What? Where do you fall on that one?
Okay. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you got two different levels. You have the various levels of Social Security, and then you got welfare. One state and one's federal. When it comes to SS and SSD, you know, when the criteria, and we have the program, that's one thing. I think SSI should be completely eliminated. Now, when it comes to welfare, that's a state thing. And with welfare, it's very small amount of money. It's no way to live. But then they get put on other things, you know, like they get the Medicaid for medical.
Do you think people should be forced to fund these programs?
What's that?
Should people be forced to fund them? Should someone be forced to send their hard-earned money to Social Security?
No, and I have a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
I have a better idea. See, that's a nice thing about when I was talking about secession, especially when we're dealing with something like the welfare level and stuff like that, which is a state thing. It could be handled in such a better way, and it could be handled literally directly with the people, and people would feel good about it.
Well, if it weren't the government doing it, then people could feel good about it, I think, because then you could choose who you want to give the money to. If welfare were a private charity, different private charities that were offering various different services, then each individual could choose who to give their money to, and then they could actually feel like they're helping rather than just feel like they're getting ripped off by the government and having their money just pissed away on a bunch of bureaucrats. But that's the libertarian position. How would you say that being a traditional Democrat is different from a libertarian?
Actually, to be honest with you, I mean, the kind of Democrat I am, not a whole lot. Like, look at my extremist, if you want to call it, absolutist view on the right to bear arms. You know how I look at it, Ian, you know?
And, you've done open carry. You're in favor of it.
Oh, I'm in. Well, my answer is what our Section 21 said should be absolute. I don't believe in FFL. I don't believe in background checks. I don't believe in the ATF form.
Yeah, that's you're definitely not a typical Democrat. I mean, from the three different issues we've been talking about so far. Ricky, what was the second thing you wanted to talk about?
Well, I was going to leave it as a surprise, but I figure I would say something about it. You know, I remember once again mentioning when I was running for District 189, Darryl mentioned, and you were on that night, he mentioned about changing my name for purposes of the ballot. And, you know, I've come to the conclusion that, you know, that's really a good idea.
Changing it to what? Ricky of the Commonwealth or Ricky for
the Commonwealth?
Of the Commonwealth?
Ricky from the Commonwealth.
From the Commonwealth.
Yeah, because come May 4th, I'm actually going to go down and have my lawyer do it. Because despite what
do you have to pay to do that down there in Pennsylvania? I know it's like $110 up here. What's it cost?
From what I understand, and I know very little of it, I know there's a fee, but it's supposed to be very easy in Pennsylvania, but I know nothing about this, yeah. Ian. So I'm just going to let my lawyer handle it.
All right,
know?
Man. Well, let us know how it goes. Thanks, Ricky, for the call tonight. I appreciate it. Yeah, here it's actually easier than it's ever been. You used to actually have to go to a 30-second long court hearing, and now it's just an online system. There's not even any kind of hearing necessary, I guess. I guess they could schedule one if they had some sort of, if they suspected you of being up to something or whatever, because that was the whole point of the court hearing. Whenever you'd change your name, you'd go in front of a judge. The judge would say, now, you're not trying to change your name for nefarious purposes, are you? And you say, nope. And then that would be the end of the hearing. So
there is a movement of things where people are going to probate court and they're changing their name from the all capital letters name on the birth certificate to the same name, but it's in basically all lowercase. And the purpose of doing this, and so this is a theory. This is not something I'm saying that, like, well, first off, I haven't done it, and it's not something I'm saying that you should do, but...
Do you know anyone who's done it, or is this just something you've seen online?
I've definitely read about doing it. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen, like, any videos of doing it. And I actually do, yes, know a girl. She went to... I actually went to the place with her because she wanted to try this. That was her witness. It was about 15 years ago. And, yeah, she paid the money, and it was in Massachusetts. It was actually the Worcester County whatever building, and records hall, registry of deeds, I guess, the probate part or probate court in that building.
Mm-hmm.
And and they were like, they thought that was very strange. Like, well, they're like, okay, you know, it's still your same name. And she was sort of, you know, working on like this freeman type, you know, thing.
Sure.
And I don't know that it had any benefit for her. I didn't really follow what happened, but she did it, and it wasn't a big deal. You know, they were just like, this is weird. But, yeah, they were like, she did have to sign some kind of affidavit said the why she was doing it,
mm-hmm.
and she said she was doing it to get herself out from underneath the jurisdiction of the United States, essentially.
That'd be nice.
And that she's not, you know, and she also attached a little affidavit with it about that it did help her sort of write and create up that she's, you know, not a legal fiction, that she's a living, breathing woman. I actually could check back with her on whatever happened with that. She kind of lives off the grid anyways. There's definitely, some interesting stuff with the all capital letters name versus the first letter capital and rest lowercase. And you'll see that there's two birth documents. There's a certificate of live birth,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a birth certificate. And the certificate of live birth has a name, first letter capital, rest lowercase, first, middle, and last name. And the birth certificate has a name in all caps. And are both available at your whatever city hall of the town you were born in. So,
what that all means, I don't really know. It's a theory that I've heard about many times over the years, and I'm just not convinced that it matters at all. But if you got some proof that it does, I'd love to hear from you. The number is 603-283-6160. I think if they want to hurt you and they want to put you in a cage, they're going to do it regardless of how you spell your name. There's more coming up here in moments. This is Free Talk Live.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
USA News Update. Former Vice President Mike Pence testified in federal probe today about Donald Trump's alleged role in the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Reports say Pence testified for several hours. President Biden struggled to remember his recent state visit to Ireland. During today's Take Your Child to Work event at the White House, he was asked what was the last country he went to.
The last country I've traveled, I'm thinking what's the last one I was in. I'm trying to think, where was the last place I was? It's hard to keep track.
Biden had difficulty answering the question for several moments before a child shouted, Ireland. The 80-year-old Biden responded, that's where it is. Two people are in the hospital after a fire and possible explosion in Oklahoma. Officials say it happened today at a marijuana grow house in Logan County. KWTV reporting the victim suffered second and third degree burns. Dave Collins, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. And there's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCNteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Yeah. It is Free Talk Live. Doors are open. Join us here. CNNJ Studio, the number 603-283-6160. And we talk pretty often here about the migration of freedom-loving people to New Hampshire. Jay, you and I were part of that migration. You moved from Massachusetts. I moved up from Florida. And there are people coming here from all around the planet, a lot of people from across the United States, in search of more freedom, in search of a community of people that understands liberty. And there's nothing else like the Free State Project anywhere else on the planet. And Mark Warden is a longtime sponsor here on Free Talk Live from Porcupine Real Estate. He's the pro at helping people relocate here to New Hampshire. And he's got a few webinars that they're putting together. They've actually been doing some of these, but there's more coming up. And you can reserve your seat to learn about some of the really cool things happening here in New Hampshire from the people who are already here. And they know about this stuff. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, political freedom victories. They've got some, of course, on moving to the Free State and finding housing here. Now, you can sign up for these for free. Just go to this URL. It's move.freetalklive.com. It'll take you right over to the Porcupine Real Estate website where you can get signed up for one, I think, or more of these webinars. You can also go back in time on their YouTube channel and see some of the existing webinars that they've already done so you can get a feel for what these are like. Porcupine Real Estate is the name of their YouTube channel. And again, you can sign up for the upcoming webinars, which obviously you can ask questions and find out all kinds of interesting things about what it's like to live here and the amazing movement that we have. Once again, it's move.freetalklive.com to sign up for the Porcupine Real Estate
upcoming webinars. Let's go to the phones here. We got Frank on the line in Michigan. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, Frank.
Hey, Ian. Just listening to your conversation a little bit about the changing the name to small letters.
And, yeah.
I assume that the reason for that is there's some kind of theory that you become sovereign or you're not subject to the laws of certain locations and whatnot. I think there's some theories about that, which I think obviously probably don't work. And but that
I wish they did. I mean, I really wish it was that simple. But it's
it's definitely not that simple, as you know. I mean, you tried something similar, I think, didn't you, back in the day in the courtroom with
I tried
judge,
some theory, or didn't go anywhere. Yeah, he threw me in jail.
You asked him to make an offer or something like that, and within 10 seconds you were in handcuffs.
Pretty much.
So that usually
what happened?
That usually means you're doing it right, because when I've went to court and I start telling them that. You know, the biggest thing with when you're being charged with like a traffic charge. So like the last time I was in court was for driving without a license,
which you don't have,
right? In Massachusetts. So I simply stated, "Who's the injured party? Who's the injured party? Who's the
state
injured party?
Or the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?"
And that's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, "Thank you. I would like to speak with Mr. and Mrs. Commonwealth of Massachusetts and settle a claim or clear up a mistake."
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "Take him in for a psychiatric evaluation." So they take me in for a psychiatric evaluation, and they ask me a bunch of questions. It was hilarious because the psychiatrist was a really attractive young blonde lady who was clearly annoyed that I basically asked her the definitions of some of the words that she was using. She's like, first thing she says, "Are you a sovereign citizen?" And I'm like, "Oh, what's the definition of sovereign citizen?" She's like, "You know, someone who doesn't like to pay taxes." I'm like, "Oh, so... that is a definition of a sovereign citizen." I said, because the definition of the word sovereign, according to the Supreme Court, is, you know, a free man. Chisholm versus Georgia, 1893. And beholden to no lord or savior is basically a free man is a sovereign. And a citizen, according to the 14th Amendment, is someone who's subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And they just, you know, had no idea what they were even talking about in these mm-hmm. questions that they're asking me. And so we go back up into the courtroom, and before I can eat, they call my name, they kind of walk me over there, and the case is already dismissed. But they wanted to make sure nobody was in the courtroom. That's a lot of the reason. So I tell people, when you're going to court, if you're doing it right, they'll probably, you know, arrest you and put you in a holding cell for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually what happened to me, and several times that's happened. But the best thing is, you know, just pushing this no injured party is really, like, you know, the big thing. And you know, because the court doesn't have any jurisdiction. There can't be any, you know, essentially there has to be a controversy. And if there's no injured party or no contract violation or no theft, there essentially is not a controversy. And,
absolutely not true. Absolutely not true.
Okay, what do you mean, Frank?
So there could be a controversy without a victim or or contract violation?
Because you had one ticket dismissed doesn't mean that the courts will claim a right and for jurisdiction. And I see it every day for 30 years, district court in Michigan, fining people for suspended license or not having a license.
Sure.
Just because they say, "I have a right to travel," that doesn't fly. You might get one person that says, "I have a right to travel. I don't need a driver's license." And then out of 100 people, the other 99 are going to get hauled off to jail, and their rights are going to be taken away from them.
I didn't say that. So I didn't say anything about you have a right to travel or even that. And that's actually kind of not really a good defense. It is probably a good element of a motion to dismiss. But you know, the fact of who's the injured party is
there
is
are
the thing.
Many, many laws that are victimless crimes that are on the books that are enforced every day.
They're
and
codes.
People are subject to them.
Not laws, they're codes.
And everybody, you can call them what you want. They're actually statutes.
Right,
and
they're not
statutes,
laws.
And when those statutes are broken, regardless of whether there's a victim or not, many people are incarcerated and or fined.
That's true.
For those. And you can say, "Well, that's not right." And I might agree with you. Maybe if there's no victim, no crime. But
mm-hmm.
there are crimes without victims, and they're enforced every day. And there's millions of dollars collected because of it throughout the United States.
It's a massive scam. is the bottom line. And people have, see, that's another thing, too, is like every 18-year-old should understand how to defend themselves in court. They should understand how to write a lawsuit. That was common knowledge amongst most of the educated people, essentially, in America.
Well, the lawyers sure as hell don't want that to be. Frank, said you see this every day. Are you an attorney? Are you in district courts regularly for some reason?
I've been a parole agent for 30 years.
Parole, okay.
But I'm speaking as a private citizen, of course. So,
yeah, no, I see that.
Not in my role.
I wish there was some sort of system that could guarantee results, but there's not. I mean, for all the results you've had, Jay, and you deserve a lot of credit. I mean, you have driven with no license successfully, and you're not in jail for it right now, so it seems to have worked out for you. You're one of the few people who actually puts his money where his mouth is as far as you put these theories into work, and thankfully you were born to a father who also seemed to share a lot of your beliefs.
Yep.
Didn't get you a social security number and kind of kept you out of the system.
I can't even get a driver's license technically because with the whole social security number stuff, they require you to have a social security number.
Yeah, but I wish there was somebody who could consistently show that some kind of tactic in court actually works. And it just, they don't, you know, you might get lucky. You might find that the judge is like, yeah, I don't want to deal with this and just dismiss the case. And we don't ever know why they dismiss the case because they never have to explain it to you.
Right.
The case is just gone and you're left to draw whatever conclusions you draw from that.
Yeah. Just
one more quick story.
Yeah. Go ahead, Frank.
A couple minutes. I write a lot of, sentencing reports, for felony cases. And, We have a prison in our county, so we get a lot of felony crimes that happen in the prison. So prisoners are coming in, getting sentenced for crimes that they committed while in prison, you know, maybe stabbing another inmate or whatever. And we had one guy come in, and he had written this lengthy motion because he was listening to the jailhouse lawyers that told him if you write your name a certain way or something, then the court doesn't have jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And do you think that worked, or do you think the judge gave him whatever the recommended sentence was or the guidelines were for that case? But
yeah, that stuff never works.
Time to time that happens. The people will come in and they'll claim that if I don't sign my name to this, then I don't agree to it, or if my name's not in all caps, then you don't have jurisdiction over me. And I've never seen it work anywhere.
Yeah, I like to tell them. And in fact, that last time in court, one of the things I said is they call the name and I'm not, if you're referring to a name on a birth certificate with a date of birth, that's not me. That's a two-dimensional entity. It's a name on a piece of paper. That's not me. I'm a living, breathing man. I'm not here to represent anything. And and then they're like, well, we'll call your name in a little while. And then, when I went up and asked who the injured party was, that's when they sent me in for the psychiatric evaluation.
And then dropped the charge.
But, one of the things is I believe what these courts are doing is they are enforcing intellectual property law, because pretty much everybody is operating under the intellectual property, which the state is charged to enforce, and they don't even really realize it, because you basically have zero constitutional rights in any district court in America. I've had several times a judge tell me the Constitution doesn't
matter. Apply.
It doesn't apply. You can't mention the Constitution in front of the jury.
I've seen it happen.
Yep.
I've seen it. Frank, thanks for sharing your story tonight. I you see a lot of this stuff, and it never works. And I definitely appreciate the feedback on that. Thank you.
You got it. Talk to you later.
Yep. I got to say, I'm a big fan of Mark Stevens after all these years. He's the guy that wrote Adventures in Legal Land. Great book. I still haven't had a chance to read the sequel. He did write a follow-up book to that. And I would like to read that one of these days. Bonnie's actually reading it right now as she's preparing to go to trial for a parking ticket.
That's excellent.
And these are the kinds of places where if you want to try one of these, let's call them court conspiracies, court theories, then getting a parking ticket or some low-level traffic offense is a perfect place to try this. It's a low level of risk. You know, I mean, you're always at risk when you're in court because the man in the robe might just get a hair up his butt and order, some guard to arrest you for contempt. So it is still risky to go to court, but if you're willing to do it, if you're willing to go to court and you want to try something you've heard about online or you've heard somebody else has done, And that's the place to do it. Whereas, you know, even if the worst happens and you completely fail and you lose, you know, you're only going to have to pay $15 for the parking ticket or something like that. And actually, in New Hampshire, you don't even have to pay. You can just refuse to pay, and then they will either sit you in jail for a night or they'll order you to do community service. And they almost always order you to do the community service. So, in my opinion, you should never pay the gang if you can avoid doing so. And so that's something you can do here with relatively low risk. So she's going to take the Mark Stevens approach. And the thing I've always liked about him is he's never said that his approach will guarantee you any kind of results.
Right.
He always says, in his experience, it'll either piss the judge off so much that he's going to lock you up for contempt,
yep,
or he'll dismiss the case. And it tends to go, he says it tends to go both ways, because there is no consistency,
nope,
to these people.
And judges are irresponsible people.
Yeah.
And by irresponsibility, the qualified immunity they have,
mm-hmm,
creates irresponsibility. Yeah, I like Mark Stevens' approach. It's really good.
He just
good.
Asks questions.
Yep.
That's all he does.
It's all about asking questions. And also, you know, another thing, too, is when you're going to court, you got to be preparing everything for appeal. And most of these questions, the purpose of them, of asking them, is for preparing your appeal so, mm-hmm, you can, you know, have knowledge of what's going on. And because there's just a lot of, like, when you start, you know, getting into the appeals process, you start thinking, oh, I should have asked that, or I should have brought this up. And then the other thing I recommend to everyone who's going to be going to court, no matter what it's for, is that you do role play.
Mm-hmm.
You
practice
practice being in front of the judge. Find someone who's a little intimidating to maybe get in your face and kind of play that character.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, that was one thing that we used to do at the farm. You know, there was times where, you know, once a week we were doing a, you know, mock court. And somebody was a judge, and somebody was a prosecutor, and, you know, and sometimes 20 guys would show up, you know, when we had a lot of friends, that were, you know, we would, you know, do this stuff for back in the day, or do this stuff with, and just having that confidence of doing a little bit of role play and letting them know you're not going to be low hanging fruit goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And challenging their jurisdiction, challenging their ability to come against you.
That's a good point, that, you know, just being willing to go to court on its own without any kind of theories, without any kind of, you know, whatever ideas you want to go in with, just being willing to be the hard target, being willing to actually put up a fight, counts for something. In,
yep,
a lot of cases, that alone can get a case dismissed, a small charge or something like that.
Just standing there and being like, I don't understand why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree to this. I'm here under threat, duress, and coercion because you guys are going to do violence against me. I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't violate any contracts. You know, who did I injure? Where's the claim?
Like you said, put the state on the stand. I want to talk to him.
Yeah, I want to talk to Mr. or Mrs. Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So one thing that's interesting is New Hampshire, if you look up the definition of state in New Hampshire, it's like the second definition in their definition code. In the RSA, I think it's RSA 21. I can't remember. I was just looking at it the other day. But they define the state as United States, territories, United States and territories. In fact, I'll look it up here and read this exactly. But anytime anybody gets any kind of complaint against them, like the complaint, and a complaint is not a claim.
Mm-hmm.
The complaint against my wife for childhood endangerment, for, you know, leaving our daughter in a car.
Yep.
Safely in a car, in her car seat while she was sleeping, on a cool day with the car running, climate control on, for 15 minutes while she ran into a store to do her return. She's getting charged with childhood endangerment after we...
By the state of New Hampshire.
By the state, mm-hmm, not state of New Hampshire.
Oh, really?
It's, yeah, any parking, any ticket is going to say state versus whoever.
Huh, okay.
And the state, it defined by the New Hampshire RSAs, is the United States.
I definitely want to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to bring that up here.
I feel like mine have said the state of New Hampshire on it. But
it'd be interesting, but I haven't seen one that said state of New Hampshire. It just says state.
Hmm.
That's it.
If you want to comment, you can join the show here. The number is 603-283-6160. I know you've been also digging into a story that you found at Psychology Today, Jay, regarding people who are... was it young workers?
Or? It's titled, What Screen Time Can Really Do to Kids' Brains.
That's the one. Okay.
So
you wanted to share something from that.
So, you know, I work like nonstop. I'm really busy. Actually, I got injured by a cow the other day. So, you know, I didn't really have any show prep when I came here, and all I simply did was internet search, internet devices, children, dopamine. And this was like number three. I never pulled up this article till today.
Okay.
So I've researched a whole bunch of articles and a bunch of research stuff as part of my investing in our posterity lecture series that I'm building that I need to really get back to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a slideshow almost completed. So anyways, this is like just what's the date on this one here? Oh, this is from 2016. Mm. I didn't realize that. So this is, you know, 8 years old, 7 years old. And I was just going to read some key points from this article.
All right, let's hear it.
A couple of things. So key points. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services estimates that American children spend 7 hours a day in front of electronic media.
That's now, a ton.
Now, this is 2016.
Yeah. And, I wonder what it is now. I'll see if I can
find I have, in recent research I've done in the past 6 months, I've come up with the same, basically 7 hours, and that was a 2021 study. There's another study, if people want to bookmark this. It's called Children's Health in the Digital Age. It's a 24-page PDF if you print it up. That one should definitely be read. So anyways, I'm going to get back into this. Another key point. Online interactions stimulate dopamine in a child's brain, which is addictive, and can lead them to prefer virtual interaction over reality. So a little bit into this article, it says, when very small children get hooked on tablets and smartphones, says Eric Sigmund, an associate fellow of the British Psychology Society and fellow of Britain's Royal Society of Medicine, they may unintentionally hinder their still-developing brains. Too much screen time too soon, he says, is the very thing impeding the development of abilities that parents are so eager to foster through the tablets.
Mm.
The ability to focus, to concentrate, to lend attention, to sense other people's attitudes and communicate with them, to build large vocabulary, all of those abilities are harmed.
I did find some numbers here, Jay, at least from a report by the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. They have something from February of 2020. So this was pre-COVID. Average children ages 8 to 12 spend 4 to 6 hours a day watching or using screens, and teens spend up to 9 hours.
Yep. That's
pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Might have gotten worse during COVID.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just think of, you know, what is it? Idle hands get in trouble.
Idle hands do the devil's work.
Yeah, that's what it is. So there's all these kids that got like nothing better to do. They're not doing anything productive.
They can't work. And the government prevents them from working.
Well, that too. So I guess in most places you actually can't work until you're 14.
And even then, most people won't hire you because there's all kinds of government restrictions. You're lucky if you can find a job at 14.
Yeah, so it's usually like running a cash register at, like, not a gas station unless someone, an adult's working there, but like at a fast food restaurant or a bag or
supermarket.
The problem is a lot of kids really want to work when they're like seven. That's like a natural time to want to work. Unless they've been, you know, their brains have been fried by the internet devices. Further into this article here, skipping through it, it gets into social development. So the brain's frontal lobe is involved in decoding and comprehending social interactions. It is in the corner of the mind that we empathize with others, take in nonverbal cues while talking to friends and colleagues, and learn how to read hundreds of unspoken signs, facial expressions, tone of voice, and more that add color and depth to real-world relationship. So how and when does the brain's frontal lobe develop? Not surprisingly, the most crucial stage in early childhood, during the same critical period, and it's dependent on authentic human interactions.
Hmm.
So if your young child is spending all of his time in front of an iPad instead of chatting and playing with friends and family and other children, his empathetic abilities, the near instinctive way you and I can read situations and get a feel for other people, could be potentially dulled.
Not only that, but think about how much worse it was during COVID. Because then whatever, not only were they in front of the screens constantly, even, you know, in class and all that, but they were also, the few times they interacted with other humans, they had masks on. And you can't get those subtle cues that they're talking about, those nonverbal communications. You can't see whether this person is smiling at you or if they're frowning or whatever. You don't know. You have no idea what this person is trying to express to you beyond just the words that you can barely hear through the mask.
Yeah, there is article after article. If you internet search children's speech development COVID or children's speech development masks, and there's just all kinds of studies where, they're like, yeah, well, there's one I read where the behavioral psychologist, child psychologist was like, I really love masks and believe we should be wearing masks, but it is not worth what it's doing to the social and language development of young children, because the thing is like, like one thing, our kids are learning Spanish right now. Well, my 3-year-old and my 19-month-old, they go to a Spanish homeschool co-op, and we just happen to be doing Spanish for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But like when the kids are, that age, they pick that stuff up real fast, especially when they're hanging out with playing with a bunch of other kids that are, practicing speaking Spanish also. So those years are like so important for mom and dad to put all that really good input into the kids, get them ahead of the curve, instead of the, the internet device.
Absolutely. Was there more you wanted to share?
On that, that's about it out of that particular article.
Yeah, it's something that we're going to definitely learn about over time and see the long-term, unfortunately, consequences of what this is going to do. Because, millennials, to a lesser extent, Gen Z, though, for sure, has been raised from day zero with devices in hand, right?
Like, and they're everywhere now. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, they were, high speed. This type of high-speed internet access was only really in cities. Now it's in every home in America through Starlink, whatever. You have high speed internet, and it's you keep your prepubescent young boys off of off the internet, because they're going to be looking at porn, and it's going to totally warp their image of what a woman should be, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And but now we're going to have this problem's going to get way worse because so many people are depending on it. But the more and more I'm talking about this, people are coming at me like, oh yeah, my oldest kid got wrecked by the internet, and my younger kids, I've never let them have access to it, and they're doing really good, and they're just ahead of the curve.
I guess I shouldn't say all of Gen Z, because some of them are from the late 90s, and they didn't have the same kind of portable devices then that we do now, but certainly whatever they're calling Generation Alpha, the generation that's coming after Gen Z, they absolutely, from day zero, have had the ability to have a device in their hands. We're not even, we don't even know what that's going to be like in the next 15 or 20 years. More coming up.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there are some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about the alarming increase in man-made disasters, financial institutions collapsing, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare, and the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on over a dozen emergency food kits. These include tasty breakfasts, lunches, dinners, drinks, fruits, veggies, meats, and snacks, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. My Patriot Supply food kits are in stock and shipped discreetly. We've seen too many Americans let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body, Brain, and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN Team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamgaday.com, and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your longevity business. Teamgaday.com. Teamgaday.com.